Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, it is a gloomy, rainy, in some cases just kind of miserable day here in Washington. And I think the nation's capital is just coming to grips with the horrifying details that the president laid out yesterday in his tax increase proposal on the rich. Time for them to pay their fair share. But there is some good news on that front today, because we have now learned, Jim, that it turns out the rich already pay way more in taxes than the middle class. Shock of all shocks. Turns out those marginal tax rates actually do apply. The new information we're seeing suggests that the rich, and that means actual millionaires, not the millionaires that Obama claims, pay just under 30% of their income in federal income taxes, whereas the middle class, those who pay around or earn around $50,000 to $75,000 a year, pay about 15%. Now, I know the administration's going to quibble with these figures because it came from a very controversial source, Jim. That would be the IRS. So if they have a problem with that, they can take it up with the tax collectors over there. But I think this is very good news in terms of where we can take this debate. I mean, it's pretty clear that even Democrats don't want to touch this. Republicans obviously won't. But it's, once again, discrediting Obama's completely disingenuous position on this, and that can only be good.
You know, one thing is, I think the best strategy for the Obama administration on this is to say, look, you know, if there's anything we learned from our presidency, it's that you cannot trust government numbers. The inaccuracy in our record means that all other government figures are suspect and not really to be trusted, et cetera. Now, I it was good to see the AP coming out and really just kind of hammering Obama on this. This is always something, when we talked about it yesterday, like, oh, it's a different tax rate between investment and the tax rate on wages. But even then, you need to have an ungodly amount of your income coming from investment and an unbelievably small amount coming from wages to have that kind of a circumstance. And it's kind of good. You're starting to hear, I think, a very legitimate point, which is that, look, if Warren Buffett's tax return is going to be the central argument for changing the U.S. tax code, well, can we at least see it? Really? I mean, you know, to say, like, I mean, first of all, let's check his figures, because it's not entirely certain of this, particularly in light of certainly that maybe the issue is just Warren Buffett as a very unique way of income that compared to most millionaires and billionaires. And then secondly, what's he paying his secretary? This is something, you know, I mean, I had mentioned that I wonder if she should be itemizing her deductions. There are a lot of ways that this secretary can get a better deal if we knew the facts here. So, I mean, again, this is effectively arguing for a fundamentally huge change in our tax code based on an anecdote, based on something Warren Buffett is asserting. And no offense to Mr. Buffett, but I think, you know, if it doesn't apply to most millionaires and billionaires, and it's just kind of a unique circumstance of him running an investment fund, well, gee whiz, you know, that makes it a less titanic injustice that the tax code must be changed to remedy at this very second. So it's also, I think this is losing steam. I think this is such transparent populism coming from Obama that it doesn't ring true. Oh, you know where he was last night, Greg?
At a fundraiser for fat cats.
A CEO of a hedge fund was hosting it. This was a gentleman who helped do the consulting and his firm made about $46 million from GM consulting on the bailout. That's exactly where you should go right after you go railing against fat cats and rich people who don't pay their share taxes, et cetera, et cetera. I believe at the event, Obama denounced pay-for-play and crony capitalism of Rick Perry, just to a little cherry of irony on top of the whole thing. So, yeah, I mean, the good news for us is that when you know, the AP says Obama is completely talking out of his ear on this. By the way, ear is not my first part of the anatomy that came to mind. You know, it's good news for us. It kind of points out that there's nothing there. This is a fairly weak argument in light of everything.
Yeah, and others have pointed out, and I haven't done the background on this, but that if Warren Buffett really wanted to help solve the problem, apparently Berkshire Hathaway owes several billion dollars in back taxes from previous years. So he could probably expedite that if he was really, really worried about rich people not paying their taxes on time or in large enough amounts. So Warren Buffett, thanks for playing. On to number two now, the bad martini. And if the president thought he was in a complicated situation over paying down the debt, he now heads to the UN this week for the opening session of the General Assembly and the issue of Middle East peace. And specifically on Friday, we're likely to hear Mahmoud Abbas call for UN approval of official recognition of a Palestinian state. Jim, obviously the president is probably, as we've established from the New York Nine race and just observing his policy towards Netanyahu and Israel over the last couple of years, he's not exactly the best friend Israel's ever had. Some believe that he's downright trying to undermine them. We'll see about that. But he is going to be in a unique position to try and stop this, because there are a lot of folks out there that think if you get Palestinian statehood, all these peace deals are out the window. And some even think that this will cause some of these countries currently dealing with the Arab Spring, like Syria and Egypt, and people looking for anything else to focus their people's rage on, to put Israel in a very vulnerable situation. So, I mean, that's a little bit of speculation, but clearly there's a push this week that the president could be in a position to either derail or at least delay, and it's going to be interesting to see if he actually does that.
Yeah, I'm actually going to give Obama about a molecule or two of sympathy here, because I think at the heart of the issue is that the Palestinian people who are demanding this immediately. I think some poll had it with, 83% wanting a unilateral declaration of this. The world remains, full of virulent pockets of anti-Israeli views, and I think I'd probably argue, outright anti-Semitic views. And so, the UN is still I believe somebody compared it to the bar scene in Star Wars of rogue regimes and dictators who are denouncing the democracy of Israel. So Obama's in a tough spot here. The thing that I think you and I can kind of look at and just kind of, shake our heads knowing is that this is what he was elected for. He was so smart and so sensitive and so had such a fine grasp of nuancing these sorts of things that he would be able to veer his way through difficult circumstances like this. And we are probably on, set for one of two. Either he doesn't veto it, and which I don't think is going to happen, but if he did, then, the circumstance for Israel gets much, much worse. Or he does, and everybody in the every Arab regime hates us, denounces us. We're right back where we started from. There is no new tone. It wasn't all Bush's fault. It is, in the end, the fundamental interests of the region. That basically Israel has always been the favorite scapegoat of a whole bunch of Arab regimes, and, they will always take that opportunity. Particularly these new regimes in places like Egypt might be something interesting to watch in all this. But this is a tough situation. It'll just be kind of fascinating to watch it through the week and watch Obama, who we were told was, the one we were waiting for, try to manage the situation. And my guess is he'll get a messy result, every bit as messy as every other president would have done. He has no special touch in these matters.
Yeah, pretty much that's been verified throughout all the people trying to deal with this mess over the decades. But if it comes down to Obama salvaging his reputation versus Israeli security, I'm sorry, Israel, you're probably not going to win that one. Just to point out, there was a co-host of mine named Jim Garrity who once pointed out that you could compare the UN to the bar scene from Star Wars, but that would be unfair to the patrons of the Mos Eisley Cantina, because as far as we know, we don't know of any mass genocidal dictators that were actually there that day. So,
true. Very true. So, thank you for reminding me of that wise comment.
Absolutely. On to number three now, and on to Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, Democrat of Missouri. He is chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus, and the headline came up in the past couple of days, Jim, that it says, Cleaver, colon, if Obama wasn't president, we would be marching on the White House. Well, here's the full quote. If Bill Clinton had been in the White House and had failed to address this problem, meaning the situation with the unemployment rate, specifically in the black community, we would be marching on the White House, he told the Miami Herald. This is a less volatile reaction in the CBC because nobody wants to do anything that would empower the people who hate the president. Well, there's nothing like sliding standards, Jim. Apparently, if a black president is okay with massively high black unemployment rates, then we're not going to do much about it. Way to go, Congressional Black Caucus. And Emanuel Cleaver, consistency is your hallmark and your calling card here.
Greg, you almost touched on the comment that was on the tip of my tongue, which was I was thinking of that phrase from President George W. Bush, the soft bigotry of low expectations,
yes.
Which was, I think a very astute assessment of what affirmative action turns into in a lot of circumstances. I think he was talking about it in terms of college test scores and law school scores that there was a significantly lower standard for African-American applicants. And I think his argument was that, does this really help African-Americans? Isn't this kind of insulting to say, well, you really can't compete at the same level as everyone else, so we're going to lower the bar. Mediocre will be good enough for you, whereas we have high standards for everyone else. In this circumstance, the Congressional Black Caucus is saying, well, look, we just don't expect that much from President Obama. We just, this is a very bad situation, but we think it's about as the best as he can do. So why should we expect anything more? Now, expect more might as well have been the Obama campaign theme, was hope, change, things will get better. We're not surprised by this. I think everyone is kind of, the what if Bush did it as a favorite game amongst conservatives. But it's rare that you see it so explicitly expressed and in such stark terms as it is by Cleaver in this case.
Yeah, certainly the case, and very disappointing, the idea that there's just not a general concern across the board and a similar reaction across the board, very unfortunate, to say the least. So plenty to watch on the tax front and the UN front and everything else throughout the rest of the week. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.